This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Good morning to you and welcome to CBS This Morning. It's Friday, July 2nd, 2021. I'm Gail King. That's Tony DeCopel. Anthony Mason is off. We're in good hands. Jerika Duncan is here. Let's go. We're going to begin in South Florida this morning with concerns that a tropical storm could slow the search and rescue efforts at the collapsed condo tower in Surfside. The work resumed last night after a more than 12-hour pause because of safety issues at the site.
President Biden and the First Lady met with survivors and families of dozens of missing people and visited a memorial honoring those who lost their lives. Omar Villafranca is in Surfside, Florida for us, just north of Miami Beach. Omar, good morning to you. We understand the President and the First Lady spent 3 hours with victims and survivors.
Good morning. They did. Day 9 of the search and rescue efforts are underway this morning. There are some storms in the forecast for later on this afternoon. That's something that first responders will be keeping an eye on. We also know that officials have notified the next of kin of 17 of the 18 victims, while dozens of families still hold out hope for their missing loved ones.
We will continue to search feverishly, as we have done all along, in the parts of the collapse that we currently have access to.
Search and rescue efforts resumed Thursday afternoon after a 15-hour standstill over safety concerns that the rest of the building could come down. Officials in Miami-Dade County said they are planning for a likely demolition of the remaining building.
This is a decision that we need to make extremely carefully and methodically.
Alan Kilsheimer is a structural engineer.
No one really knows in detail exactly what the condition of the remaining building is. We also have a storm coming. So we're looking at the storm and what it does to the building.
Could this storm knock the remaining parts of the building down?
Everything's possible.
Earlier Thursday, President Biden and the First Lady paid their respects at a growing memorial after meeting with first responders.
The whole nation is mourning with these families. They see it every day on television. They're going through hell.
Moments earlier, Mr. Biden privately met with survivors and victims' families for nearly 3 hours.
The president came out and he spoke a few things. It was like, I'm here for you. Hang in there.
Including Steve Rosenthal, who had lived in the condo for 20 years before it collapsed.
But we lost everything. When he was finished, he literally went to every table, talked to every person, and as long as you were talking, he was listening. It was amazing. It really was.
FEMA says it'll likely be weeks before the rest of this building here behind me is brought down. President Biden has ordered a federal probe into what caused the collapse, and he also pledged to pay for the recovery efforts here, the federal government will, for the first month. Jerika?
Omar, thank you. This morning, millions of Americans are hitting the road to get a jump start on their 4th of July weekend. According to AAA, more than 47 million people are expected on the roads and in the sky, nearly matching pre-pandemic levels. Errol Barnett shows us what's in store for travelers. Errol, good morning.
Hey there, good morning. Jerika, you and everyone else hitting the roads can expect lots of company. This increased demand in fuel is really pushing prices up. At this fuel station here in Washington, D.C., it's an Exxon. Prices moved up a few cents to $3.29 this morning. That's slightly higher than the national average, which is $3.13 a gallon right now. All of this about a 42% jump from where we were just this time last year. And we should highlight that if you see while you're out on the roads, fuel stations that are out of gas, please do not freak out. There is no fuel shortage. It's just that many fuel drivers that were laid off during the pandemic have not returned to work. So in some places around the country, gas stations are having a hard time getting fuel to the pump. But don't worry, it is there. And it's another sign of traveler optimism when we look at how many people are flying. 3.5 million expected to take to the skies over this pandemic weekend. And if you're not near the television, can you guess the top 4th of July destinations this weekend? They're on your screen now. According to AAA, that is Vegas, Mile High, Denver, Anaheim in California, and Orlando. And the cardinal rule for any road trip, Tony, the driver gets to pick the music. So follow that, and you'll keep the peace out there as you head to your favorite spots this 4th of July weekend.
Errol with the news and the travel tips. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Washington, D.C. was slammed by powerful storms last night. At one point, a tornado warning forced thousands of people to take cover. CBS News meteorologist and climate specialist Jeff Berardelli is watching more rough weather, including that new tropical storm. Jeff, good morning. What are you looking at?
Good morning, Tony. Good morning, everyone. Well, in the Northeast, the line of storms, severe line of storms that packed a punch, is a drought-busting and actually a heat-busting cold front. Because take a look at this. We're going to see a bunch of cold, record-high temperatures, 40 degrees less than they were this week, with temperatures only near 60 degrees. All right, in the tropics, we are off to a record-breaking pace once again, just like last year. It's the earliest fifth named storm. Tropical Storm Elsa is well formed this morning. It's going to move across the Caribbean. It may strengthen a little bit, but because it's moving so fast and because it's going to interact with Cuba, it will likely weaken. However, it's probably going to produce some rain and wind for places like Florida as we head into Monday, Tuesday, and again on Wednesday. Still hot in the Northwest, but not nearly as hot. Let's talk about the drought. Look at this. Record-breaking drought cover at 93%. Look at all the fires in the Southwest, into Northern California and Oregon, and 80 fires in British Columbia. And Gail, you know, that fire that affected Lytton, Canada, 3 days in a row, they had record-breaking heat. They broke their all-time record. Then the next day, the village burns down. That is a direct connection between climate change and catastrophe.
You know, Mother Nature's not cooperating, Jeff, because it's 4th of July weekend. We want good weather. Yeah. Very sorry to see that. But always good to see you. Thank
you. Good to be here.
Thank you very much. The historic heat that Jeff was talking about in the West is blamed for what may be record-breaking hospitalizations in Washington state. Hospitals report nearly 1,800 emergency room visits for heat-related illness in this past week. At least 100 people have died in the West, and that includes a farm worker in Oregon. The punishing heat is bad news for all farm workers in that region. Lilia Luciano looks at efforts to protect them.
For nearly a week, farm workers at this southern Washington state cherry farm have faced temperatures as high as 113 degrees.
This is a crisis. It's an emergency.
We followed volunteers with the United Farm Workers Union as they handed out cold drinks.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
And explained the signs of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Yolanda Carrion told us farm workers, who are typically paid by the amount of crops they pick, are often hesitant to take breaks.
What does it feel like in this heat?
La primer día que empezó bien caliente, se sentía poco de, como náuseas.
You start feeling nauseous.
This heat wave has been different. It's been a lot harder.
Many, including this 11-year-old named Juan, start their shift as early as 3 a.m. to avoid the heat.
And until what time are you working?
I don't really know.
Now, the United Farm Workers Union is pushing for safeguards like those already in place in California.
We are demanding that the governor implement emergency rules for this heat crisis for our farm workers here in Washington state. They need cold water, they need rest breaks, and they need shade in the fields.
Sebastian Francisco Perez, presente.
Volunteers also honored farm workers who have lost their lives, including Sebastian Francisco Perez, an Oregon farm worker from Guatemala who died last weekend. His death raises concerns about the heat in the weeks and months ahead.
One thing that worries me the most is that there's children out here working, and that a lot of the workers don't feel comfortable calling 911.
That was Lilia Luciano reporting from Washington state. Well, prosecutors in New York City have revealed the criminal charges against the Trump Organization and its chief financial officer. The indictment accuses Alan Weisselberg and the former president's company of a fraud lasting years. Jeff Pegues is outside Trump Tower in New York City. Jeff, how are they responding to these charges?
Well, the Trump Organization says that these charges are all about politics. Alan Weisselberg says that he's going to fight the charges in court. But when you look at the charges, they really are a stunning list of accusations dating back more than 16 years. A grand jury here in Manhattan brought the charges against Weisselberg and the Trump Organization, accusing them of running a tax fraud scheme involving off-the-books payments and concealing almost $1.7 million from the government. Prosecutors say Weisselberg failed to report payments on benefits like luxury cars, bonuses, a company apartment, a private school tuition for family members. Weisselberg was also charged with grand larceny, which carries a 5 to 15 year prison sentence. Mr. Trump slammed the charges as a witch hunt from radical left prosecutors, and the Trump Organization called it an inappropriate use of a local prosecutor's vast and unchecked power to target a political opponent. This indictment really is going to put pressure on Alan Weisselberg to flip on his former boss, because if you look at the list of charges, if he's convicted, he faces the potential of decades in prison. And there could be more charges in this case, because the grand jury hearing evidence is impaneled through November. Tony.
All right, we'll be following it, Jeff. Thank you very much. Moving on this morning, the Boy Scouts of America announced an historic deal overnight to settle accusations of widespread abuse by its leaders. The agreement would create a payout pool of up to $850 million with a maximum of $10,000 each for people who say they were abused as children. The plan has been approved by attorneys representing some 60,000 people. That's only about two-thirds of the total claims against the Boy Scouts. Mola Lenghi is following this story for us. Mola, good morning to you. What does it mean for survivors?
Well, good morning, Tony. If this deal is passed, it could be an opportunity for survivors to be compensated for abuse within the organization that some say went on for decades. But still, one survivor told us it is simply not enough to make up for the impact that this has had on his life.
I've had problems my whole life because of this.
Anthony Mandich was around 10 years old when he says a scout leader first sexually abused him.
Masturbation and oral sex and touching and talking.
He left his first group because of the abuse, but joined another troop in Sun Valley, California shortly after.
That started something that went on for 2 years.
He says a different leader abused him there. He didn't tell anyone at the time, but now says the pain traumatized him.
I feel like it's ruined my whole life. I mean, I've underachieved my entire life.
Mandich is one of almost 90,000 alleged victims who filed claims against the Boy Scouts of America when the organization filed for bankruptcy in February. In the proposed settlement deal released late last night, the national organization would set up an $850 million fund and allow victims to try for more through insurance payouts.
This is a bad deal for survivors.
Michael Pfau represents Mandich and more than 1,000 other people with claims. He says that survivors deserve more, and that the plan lacks accountability on local organizations like councils and churches that run scout chapters.
It doesn't hold the Boy Scouts accountable. It doesn't hold the local councils accountable. The local councils are the eyes and ears of the Boy Scouts.
In a statement, the Boy Scouts of America said this is a global resolution that will equitably compensate survivors and ensure scouting's future. Victims groups involved in the deal said it is a significant accomplishment that achieves consensus. But for other alleged victims like Mandich, the deal gives him second thoughts.
I almost wish I didn't even come forward because it feels like I'm not even being listened to.
Well, this settlement agreement will now be voted on by the more than 82,000 accusers, and then it'll move to bankruptcy court for a judge to approve. The Boy Scouts of America says this deal could provide the framework for the group to finally emerge from bankruptcy later this year. Jerika, these stories never easy to hear.
Never at all. Thank you, Mola. Well, the national political fight over voting rights is escalating after the Supreme Court upheld two regulations in the battleground state of Arizona. In a 6-3 decision, the court ruled the voting laws were not discriminatory and did not violate the Voting Rights Act. Jan Crawford covers the Supreme Court. Jan, good morning to you. What does this mean
for future cases?
Well, good morning, Jerika. I mean, you know, this case was seen really as an important test for these new restrictions we're seeing on voting. And this conservative court is signaling it is not likely to overturn a lot of these new voting laws that are now being passed in states across the country.
The two Arizona voting provisions had been on the books for years. The first discards ballots cast in the wrong precinct. The second bans so-called ballot harvesting, where third parties other than family collect piles of absentee ballots and turn them in. Arizona Attorney General Mark Gronovich argued the case in favor of the voting laws.
Why'd you defend this?
We want to make sure that everyone has the ability and the right to exercise the franchise, but we also want to make sure that everyone has confidence in the process and they respect the results. And that's what these laws are designed to do.
Six justices on the court agreed that neither provision violated the Voting Rights Act because they were not enacted with a racially discriminatory purpose, and states have an entirely legitimate interest in the prevention of fraud. But the court's three liberal justices said the decision undermines the Voting Rights Act because laws like Arizona's discriminate against minority voters. In a statement, President Biden said he was deeply disappointed.
It is critical that we make a distinction between voter suppression and suspension.
The decision comes as 48 state legislatures have introduced 389 bills this year alone that could restrict voting access. CBS News election law contributor David Becker.
So the need for some kind of basic standards of election practices and voting rights is very, very stark right now. And we're really, Congress is our last hope really for a lot of this.
Now, this decision, of course, came on the last day of the court's term, but next term, the court is going to tackle some of the most divisive issues in society, including abortion. Gail?
Oh, boy, we'll all be watching. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you for listening to the CBS This Morning podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to get daily podcast originals.
You can watch the CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station or live on the CBS All Access app.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.